Welcome to Season 7 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Daniel Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
Unpub Festival is approaching, and AllPlay wanted everyone to know they'll not only be there, but to check out a few games that were signed thanks to the show. They include River Valley Glassworks, Chomp, Oddland, Fiction, Things and Rings, A Message from the Stars, and I'm sure there's plenty more that can be found at allplay.com, so check them out. Before we start today's episode, I wanted to introduce the audience to Hunter Johnson, a board member on Unpub. As many of you know, I am a huge fan of the organization and was on the board for years, so I wanted to take a few minutes to talk to Hunter about Unpub and what you can expect from going to Unpub Festival. Thanks for joining me, Hunter.
Thank you so much, Danielle, for having me.
Yeah, of course. So to begin with, for anyone who hasn't heard any of my episodes, what is Unpub?
Awesome question. Unpub is a volunteer-run nonprofit with a mission focused on making it easier to make games and learn about the industry. Unpub makes this happen in three main ways. It hosts playtesting spaces for unpublished games at conventions, making it easier for designers to receive feedback on their games. It runs educational panels and shares resources, making it easier for designers to learn about the industry and the process of making games. And it runs a free-of-cost 12-week mentorship program, pairing mentors and mentees together based on their knowledge and goals. It's an incredible organization that provides awesome resources to new and experienced designers, and I'm so happy to help them as much as I can in general, and we're leading up to Unpub Festival.
I am so excited for Unpub Festival. For anyone who doesn't know what adding the festival tag means, what is it?
Unpub Festival is a convention that Unpub runs itself. So it's exclusively for unpublished games and their designers, and is really focused on helping people with Unpub's kind of goals, as I just mentioned. There we have over 25 educational panels and workshops, many led by publishers, designers, and manufacturers. And we have an enormous ballroom full of over 70 tables where designers can get their games playtested by each other and by the public. It's an awesome convention for almost anyone to attend and is such a valuable resource for designers with unpublished games.
I will definitely second on this. I love Unpub Festival. I tell people constantly it is my favorite playtesting show. So like as a designer, I get the most done there. And when is it?
It's coming up in March, actually. So it's from Thursday, March 12th to Sunday, March 15th. Those panels and workshops run from midday Thursday to midday Friday, along with some other fun events, starting Friday evening at 5 p.m. The ballroom is full of games to be playtested by each other and the general public.
Perfect. And so you kind of mentioned already who Unpub is for. It seems like a mix of designers, publishers, game enthusiasts. Was there any other notes that you didn't kind of touch on?
I think everyone can find that value in the way that makes sense to them. Like if you're a game designer, Unpub Festival was honestly my first convention I've ever been to in my life a few years ago. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And I showed up with my game. I didn't really know much about next steps, if I wanted to do anything else beyond that. And it was just such a wonderful experience. Everyone was so uplifting. I got to meet all these other designers who were either in my shoes or had been before. And it was just an incredible way to learn, have fun, and be so helpful to everyone else.
I remember one of the times I talked with you, it was about a party game. And very quickly from a conversation with you, like I think two-ish years ago, and then about a year ago, I also had many other designers come up to me about party games. It actually kind of inspired me to a workshop and a panel at this coming one. So I feel like too often we talk hobby games like strategy, how to make those. So I'm excited to kind of touch on the lighter side of gaming and kind of explore that as one of the panels people can attend.
Yeah, I'm really excited for that panel. I asked you about that 2 years ago. I had friends who were asking me to ask you about that too.
Yep.
I think it's an awesome topic. And right, all of Unpub is just trying to get people and designers familiar with like what paths can your games take. It is awesome if you're making a game and it's just for your family. It's awesome if you're making a game and you want to kickstart it and own a lot of the process. It's awesome if you want to go pitch it to publishers, and it's just giving everyone those resources, helping them meet each other. And again, it's just so uplifting that really you feel like you have those tools and people you can ask further questions. And just as an aside, if you are afraid to call yourself a game designer, but you're working on a game, you're a game designer. Welcome, come, you're great.
I totally agree with this. It's also really great to see this combination of publishers being there too, because publishers are normally so busy at other more like customer focused shows where, yes, they might carve out time to do pitches, but especially for a new designer, they're not really going to have the ability to have access to those publishers quite as easily as someone like me who's been around for now quite a few years. Oh God, I'm feeling old. But yeah, so it's like really cool because you might not know you're actually playing your game, like playtesting it with a publisher. I know for me, I didn't realize that. I guess it was about 2 years ago when I was playtesting with Nathan, who owns Pandasaurus Games, and ended up getting an offer for Tricky Kids. So it's like you have those magic moments sometimes at the show, and I'm not promising that. I'm just saying there is the opportunity for things like that to happen or to find your next co-designer.
1,000%. Yeah, no, I've heard that there are publishers who go and almost every single year take a game home with them to try and figure out if they want to sign. I've heard publishers who didn't fully understand UnPub Festival, and then they went once and they're like, well, this is awesome. I get to try all these games. I get to connect with these designers who could literally have my next game on their table. And it's great for you publishers if you're listening to this.
I completely agree. UnPub has given a pathway for the publisher to the entry-level designer, the one who maybe doesn't have a game signed, or they do have something signed but nothing out, to prove that, you know, they have viable ideas. And I know watching and now being like on the in, it's one of my largest frustrating points is that some of these big publishers, until you have a game signed, aren't going to look at you. But UnPub, that's not the case. That's not how it works. We have people like Czech's Game Edition came last year all the way from the Czech Republic, which I thought was amazing, just to scout games. And so it's really cool to get that opportunity as a newer designer, me as a playtester, to like check out some of these games that later on might actually get published and my name maybe will be in the book, because some hobby game publishers like to put playtester names.
Absolutely. And that's really, again, the last audience of just like, if you want to come and just play tomorrow's games today, come to UnPub Festival. We love having people who come just to play games. Otherwise, you'd have a bunch of unplayed games on tables. We'd love to have you there, and you really make the festival what it is, and you get this kind of sneak peek to some awesome games you might see in the future.
Oh, totally. And there are many established game designers there, too, that you can play their games. But also, what are the costs associated with the show? So if you want to play test, if you want to be a designer, what are we looking at money-wise?
Great question. It costs $75 to be a full show attendee. So a lot of designers will get this badge. It allows you to attend all 4 days, see all the panels, and it lets you get your games playtested. If you are that full show attendee, for another $35 to $75, depending on the table, you can reserve a playtesting table to get your games playtested by other attendees. If you don't want that full show badge, it costs $5 to be a supporting attendee. This lets you play tomorrow's games today. It lets you attend our keynote speaker, Connie Vogelman's panel. We're really excited to have her there this year. It gets you a printed badge and some complimentary charity raffle tickets supporting Rose Gauntlet. And that's just for $5. If you just want to come and play games, it is free at the door. You can just come, check in, write your little badge yourself, and then you go in and go find whatever awesome games you want to go play test.
Yeah, I highly recommend, especially if you have like family or friends or something that want to just pop in and say hi and check out some other games while they're there. Totally do that. $0. Big fan. And so beyond that, I know we kind of already touched on some stuff to expect. We talked about panels. We talked about the playtesting. But also, I know that we have some like mixer events too. So like just for you as a newer designer, kind of like how you were Hunter going for your first convention, we do have events that will let you kind of be forced into talking to other designers and other publishers. So it's not going to be just a, you show up and you don't know what to do. Like we have a beautiful schedule, pick what you want to check out and then participate if you want to be a little more extroverted like I am.
100%. Like even just in those panels, they're usually in smaller rooms. So you can, right afterwards, you talk to who you're next to and all of a sudden you're next to a new designer just like you and someone who's made 7 games that have been published. We have an event called a Pro-Am Game Jam, where a bunch of designers get paired with more of an expert in the industry, and you kind of on the spot within 30 minutes, an hour, need to make up a new game based on a prompt and kind of pseudo pitch it to the entire room. We'll have a karaoke night. Like, there's plenty of options to meet these other people and just look around, say hi. Everyone is wanting to meet each other and just help make new wonderful games happen and get created.
Yeah, I love being a part of the Pro-Am Game Jam. Last year, we created a horse game and I got to pretend to be a horse. So, like, what other conventions do I get to do that? None that I can think of.
Honestly, yeah, you'll walk in, you'll see a silly mascot, you'll see some lovely horse paraphernalia around. And you kind of get immediately just like, no, this is a chill space. You can be comfortable regardless of how experienced you are. And it's really just awesome, educational, and fun time. Yeah, I'd say whoever goes, you end up feeling helpful and having fun. And that's an awesome combo.
And the fun fact is, so we recorded this right before an episode, and that episode is Wispwood. And Wispwood actually got signed at an Unpub Mini at BGGCon. So get excited and get prepared for this episode coming up. But Hunter, thank you so much for talking about Unpub. Is there anything we didn't touch on before we say goodbye?
I would just say, if you want to find out more, you can go to unpub.org/2026festival. And there you'll find all the information we talked about, some more details. The panel schedule should be up by the time you're hearing this. Feel free to reach out with any questions and check out the rest of what Unpub does as well. We have, again, some great presence at other conventions, at Origins. We run our mentorship program, which you can check out all from unpub.org.
Highly recommend. That was one of the ways I got into gaming. So big, big fan. Well, thank you, Hunter, for being on the show.
Thank you, Danielle. Have a good one.
Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 134, Wispwood. Today, we are joined by Reed Ambrose, freelance game designer and also first-time designer thanks to this game. So super excited to talk to you about it.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So I met you at BGGCon, which I believe is going to be where the story begins on this. But before that, how did you start designing games for people who don't know you?
Sure. So it was about in 2017, just after my first BGGCon experience, I got into the online contest on Board Game Geek. And I started there for probably a few years and didn't probably take design too seriously at that time. I was just kind of cutting my teeth. It wasn't until around COVID that I met a couple other game designers who were already in the hobby and had a number of games already signed under their belt. And they really kind of took my craft to the next level, but it also kind of opened my eyes to taking it more serious.
What made you want to take it more serious from what you saw?
I think those first few years doing the contest, my goal was, could I just even win a contest? You know, like, do I have any kind of shot at actually publishing a game? And I think I let that be the bar for me for a long time, where it was like, well, if I can't win a contest, why would I have a game that ever got signed and, you know, and published? And I think I let that define how far I could go for a while.
That's always interesting. A lot of people that have been on this podcast were originally starting by trying to design for contests, which is kind of nice because you have a rule set, you have a box to design inside of, you have a place to start versus just this open-ended, any thought that comes to your mind, how do I apply mechanics, a theme, and like build it. So I think it's a great way to kind of use that as building blocks to getting into design. So I think that was the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the restrictions and the deadline, all of those things are really helpful just to get started and to, you know, not only start them, but also to have a timeline to finish them as well.
Yeah, I feel like being a freelancer, especially having self-imposed deadlines, is not always the easiest. So having a contest that's not going to let you email them and ask for an extension makes you get a little better at designing, in my opinion. And so we're here to talk about Wispwood. Before we jump into how the game was designed and inspired, how do you play the game?
So Wispwood is a family weight tile laying game. You're building a forest that is full of tree tiles and also wisp tiles. One of the maybe unique features of the game is that you're building polyomino, like Tetris shapes, with individual tiles. And so as you start to build in the first round your grid, that's eventually going to be a 4x4, between the round, after you score, the other twist of the game is that you remove some of the tiles from your grid. And so that opens up new spaces for the next round, but it also, some of the WISP tiles are left behind, and that kind of creates your own unique spatial puzzle that you have to solve for future rounds.
No, I was a huge fan. So as I mentioned at the beginning of this, we met at BGGCon thanks to UnPub, and I'd love for you to take it from there, from your perspective, and how this game started to find some publishers.
This was the fall of 2024, and UnPub was running an event that was a speed pitching event, and I had entered what was Wispwood at the time, and it got accepted into this event, and I got to pitch the game to five different publishers, and I probably had about 7 or 8 minutes per publisher to pitch the game. And you were one of those at, you know, at the time, and then also CGE, who eventually became, you know, the publisher of Wispwood, was there as well. And so I got to pitch that to five different publishers, and I got followed up with two of them. And one of them, as I just mentioned, was you and CGE as well. So from there, that was probably in late November. And so as it is with just the industry, it takes a little bit of time to move from that to, you know, getting a game actually signed. And so it probably wasn't until early February, if my timing might be off a little bit there, but when I signed with CGE. And one of the interesting things there, when you have two different companies vying for your game, is just as you're waiting maybe for one contract and, you know, another contract, and kind of weighing the different options, but still trying to balance those things and, you know, be kind and communicative to both of them. And so you actually were much quicker than CGE from just kind of after BGGCon. And so I had known a contract was coming from your company. And at that time, I think y'all were restructuring the contract and reworking it. And so it actually took probably another month or month and a half, even. I don't know exactly the time frame there.
Yeah. Unfortunate fun fact of legalese, everyone takes off during the holidays. So getting anything done is not easy. Yes. And very frustrating. And the company I was working at the time was Wise Wizard / Wacky Wizard, just for reference for anyone listening.
And so, you know, so that makes perfect sense. So it took, you know, another month, month and a half to restructure, I guess, the contract that y'all do for game designers. And in the meantime, CGE had asked for the files, and they took it to their Czech gaming day that was in like mid-January. My hopes weren't really set on CGE at the time, because I really didn't think it was a game that fit their catalog very well. And I was even told that at the pitch.
He does not hold back on feedback, which I kind of respect. And it's also very much the Czech way, even though I'm pretty sure he's based in the US and American, but he fits the vibe.
I too respect that a lot. Like, I appreciate honesty, and he was honest, and I agree with him that it was not the most CGE, you know, game when you look at their catalog. And so because of that, I really didn't have any kind of expectations, right? Like, I'd already been told that. And so it was just, and it was probably even a good thing, you know, looking back, that it was just like, I didn't have my hopes or expectations set on CGE. And I also had Wise Wizards that I was genuinely happy to sign with and genuinely happy to make a game with you and with that team. So I felt very fortunate and very blessed, like, be in a situation, you know, like that. It just, you know, came about that CGE ended up wanting the game and sent me a contract the same week that I got the contract from Wise Wizards. And so that's never tough, you know, wanting to tell one you're going with one or the other. But I tried to navigate that situation as best I could. And you and all the people Wise Wizards were very understanding. And so I really appreciate that it wasn't maybe a more difficult situation, but y'all were very kind about it. So I really appreciated that.
Oh, totally. I feel like for me, anytime I find a game that I wanted to show to my bosses, it was I am your biggest advocate. I'm going to show like how I think the product could be. I a lot of times would even pull up artists that I think could make it look better. So I basically create a pitch package and I show it to the owners, and then they'll look at it, decide if they want to play it. And then if they liked it in that play, they'll maybe play it with a few more people, with their family, whatever it is. And then that's kind of how we decide what we're going to sign down the line. But I really appreciated like how quickly, because even at BGGCon, I saw your quick pitch in a speed pitch, which is not enough time to play the game. And so I asked you if we could play the next day. while we're at the convention. So you actually played it with me and also Sydney from Indie Boards and Cards at the same time. But I think on the designer side, it was nice seeing your ability to be like flexible, wanting to show off the game. And like, I know from my side, when I'm a designer pitching to a publisher, you want to do that. You want to make sure to have as much in-person time with the publisher so you can see if you would vibe with them. And I know with like us reaching out, you would have worked with me. So knowing that you would have been working with me, it kind of helps. Versus, I don't know, with like CGE, if ended up being Gus being the person who developed with you or someone else. I'm not really sure how that worked, but I'd love to know how it ended up.
Sure, yeah. And to just what you said before about being an advocate for the game that you were interested in, I really felt that like from that point on after BGGCon and you having played it and being interested in it. You were very communicative, and I just really appreciated that sense of, the friendliness in which you approached it, and also just kind of the passion that you had for it. And yeah, I appreciate you, you know, bringing that back to your people in that way. So that was very helpful. I would say as far as CGE goes that I really didn't deal with Gus too much after that. He and another guy were at the pitch. And so I actually dealt with Felix more after that. He was the one that emailed me and asked for the files and then brought it, I think, to their Czech Gaming. But even from that point, you know, pretty quickly it passed off from Felix to people more on the game design and development side of CGE. So that, you know, wasn't long lived either. And so, pretty quickly they brought me in and had some initial meetings. And it was clear to me early on that they bring the designer along the entire time, which I know is not always the case. It's a range, it's a spectrum for all different publishers. But for CGE, they very much strap you in the front of the roller coaster with them. And so you get to ride all the ups and downs. And that's, you know, at times it's really fun and at times that's stressful. But at the same time, I do think most would probably choose that just because they do get to be a part of the process. And thankfully, they're really kind people. They've really valued my opinion, which was nice as well. They didn't have to do that. And they're very good at what they do. They have a lot of experience and even awards under their belt. And so I had a lot of respect for them and for their feedback and their comments. And they're really quite the, I feel like, unicorn as far as how they develop games. They even, you know, at times include all of, you know, the people in their company can have say on different things. And so it was very nice to have a lot of creative and smart people care about something that like you had an idea for. No one was asking, you know, me or a new designer for a game, right? And so the fact that you then have 60 plus people interested in your game and asking questions and talking about the nitty gritty details of it was really great to experience.
That's so awesome. And what inspired the initial design for Wispwood?
So I'd have to go back. This was even probably in my BGG contest days. It originally started as an 18 card game, which kind of sounds wild. And my design premise there, and this was actually, I guess, self-imposed, but I just kind of wondered if I could design an 18 card polyomino, you know, Tetris shaped game. I have a blog post on BGG about it. If you, you know, it's under the Wispwood forum section if you really want to read more about it. But that was the premise, was an 18 card game. And I actually shelved it after a while, but the core concept of the game was still in those 18 cards. It took a couple years for me to break it out of the 18 card format and release those restrictions. So it's like sometimes those restrictions are good for certain reasons and coming up with ideas, but then other times they're limiting in maybe what the game could be if you were to remove those. So it was an interesting journey in trying to figure out, you know, the core of the game and the fun of it, but also how far, you know, I could take the design as far as like number of tiles, how many rounds it has, number of cards and things like that to actually zoom out and see the game in a bigger way than just, you know, the 18 cards.
I always find it interesting when someone starts either a super heavy game and kind of pares it down to be that inspiration versus the opposite direction. I feel like it doesn't happen as much this direction you're describing.
Every game has its own unique journey there that you're, you know, trying to follow the fun and the feedback of playtesters and such. But yeah, that was quite the interesting journey for Wispwood.
And thematically, where did that come from?
That's a great question. I went to grad school for English, and so I've always loved certain literary elements. And one of those is called Ignis Fatuus, where there's this light that's leading people in the forest. And really, I've always just been fascinated by that. So I've written a couple papers on Ignis Fatuus and these lights that are this mysterious lore around the world, and people documenting them in their own countries differently than others, but all have kind of this similar through line of lights misleading people in a marsh or forest. And I've always just loved that theme. And so I wanted to create a game with that. Truly, that was the basis of it. And the cats come in, and I know cats are really popular in the board game industry, but I didn't just choose cats because of that. I really thought that because cats chase laser lights or flashlights, that I thought it was pretty humorous that they may chase, you know, magical lights. And so a funny story about this theme, actually, I liked it so much that I applied it actually to multiple games that I have for prototypes. And this is maybe game design advice that I would say, don't do this, because then you have to maybe deal with certain ramifications. And so I actually applied it to two different games. And this was around the time that, you know, I went to BGGCon to pitch Wispwood in 2024. And I had another small box game that I had the same theme on there. And up until that point, I hadn't signed or published any game. And so in my head, I'm thinking, oh, it would, you know, just hopeful that if any game gets signed, maybe it's one of those two, that I would have time to go back home and change the theme before I pitch it at the next pitch. I never in my wildest dreams, you know, imagined that I might sign both of those at the same convention, but that was the convention where they both got picked up. And so then I had the dilemma of going to the other company and saying, hey, look, I've signed this game with CGE and it has the same theme and they want to keep it. Both publishers wanted to keep the theme. So that was something that's pretty rare too, right? Even you, I think, wanted to change the theme just slightly. But, you know, this case, they both wanted to keep the theme. And so I had to kind of work things out with both of them. And they were both very kind. But I still, to this day, feel pretty silly for having my first two signed games have the exact same theme of cats chasing lights in the forest.
It's pretty niche.
Yes. And some of my friends joke, you know, how like Uwe is known for like farming themed games or something. They joke that, you know, I'm the cats chasing lights in a magical forest themed designer. So we'll see if that continues. I don't have any more prototypes with that theme. So
that seems best. What theme did the other one change to?
So it didn't change, which is why I had to actually reconcile the situation between the two publishers.
Lessons learned.
Yeah, exactly. So as much as people say the theme is not kept, and I do believe that that is true a lot of the times, there are cases where the theme is kept. And it just happened to be the case for both of those games.
To be completely honest, I would say of the games I've pitched and signed, more than half of the themes have been kept and more than half of the names have been kept. I always would pitch it with whatever theme I thought would be best, but I might come up with alternatives just in case. But I think also I tend to design games that are very like product focused, and I can talk about how I would sell the game, and that might be why. But it is a good idea just for yourself when you have enough designs that you do have multiple that you can pitch, especially if you put it in the form of like a pitch deck versus just individual sell sheets, that they are different from one another, because otherwise they might blend in the publisher's mind and they're just competing with each other. Even if they're mechanically entirely different, having the same theme would normally knock each other out. But I mean, it's great that that didn't happen in your case.
I totally agree with you. Looking back, I would have done it differently, but it did work out. So thankful for that, but I know that that might not always be the case. And as you're saying, with yours being a little more product focused, both of mine are abstract spatial games. And so the theme could have been anything. But I do know the theme can be a selling point. Ideally, I was hoping that theme would, you know, stick with one of them, but I would never have dreamed, you know, for going from no game signed to two game signed, that they would both still have the theme and it'd be the same one.
That's a very interesting problem to have that I can honestly say I don't hear often. And what kind of changes did CGE make while developing the game? I know that I just recently played the published version and I remembered the prototype, so I know what the differences were, but I'd love for you to go through them.
Do you feel like there were a lot of changes or like...
No, I feel like it was very minor streamlining choices, which actually I did like a lot of. I didn't play the solo mode, so I don't remember you having a solo mode in your version, so I'm not sure.
We did add that along the way. You're correct that the core of the game, the spatial mechanic of the individual tiles within a Tetris shape and the removing of the tiles between rounds, none of that changed. There were just very, as you mentioned, streamlining is a good word. Probably one of the bigger changes was there were some extra cubes in the game. And these were kind of to fill those one by one holes that you might create in your grid. And there were also some extra tiles associated. I think they were called like marsh tiles or swamp tiles, with these little cubes that you'd place on them. And those ended up getting streamlined into the cat tile. And so the cat tile, one of the big changes along the way was one of the, I think, graphic designers, artists at CGE recommended having the cat tile have two different sides to it, which allowed it to kind of now flip and be exhausted and act as, you know, like a triggering mechanism for having an ability. And so that one thing of just allowing the cat tile to have a second side totally removed like the extra, I think there were like 16 tiles and 16 cubes.
Yeah, your firefly cubes.
Yes. And so, and actually you mentioned the solo part.
I know it had fireflies. I noticed.
Yes, the fireflies made it back in there. And so CGE was used to the firefly tokens initially in the development of it. And so they knew that was kind of a thing. And for the solo, we ended up bringing them back. So I'm glad they made it, you know, in the game at all. But for a long time there, didn't know if they're actually going to make it in the game. The cat tile having two sides was absolutely, I think, a great way to streamline all of those extra components. And in addition to it, you get to flip the cat tile over and the cat's hiding in a tree stump. And I think that's a really fun feature in the game as well. So that's one of the great examples, I think, of CGE doing their thing and helping develop it. And so, you know, between just some of the balancing of the math and the numbers.
Yeah, I'm sure the scorecards, a few of those kind of got tweaked. I know the witch hats changed. Yes. Where you actually had a restriction applied to it to make it different than the other ones.
Yes, yeah, that happened as well. I don't know if we meant to do this or not, but we really kind of almost didn't start like fresh with all the cards, but we really took a hard look at every single card and also tried to come up with plenty of other ones to see if they were better or not. We really spent a lot of the development looking at the scorecards instead of like the core of the game. The cards probably are what changed the most, even though you probably would still see a lot of the same ones that were in there originally. They probably subtly changed, or the number math behind it changed a little bit. But yeah, those were probably some of the major changes, that and even like the pond where you draft the tiles from in the middle of the game space. Like, they just made that a lot prettier and a lot more thematic than I had it originally with the prototype as well.
Also, another change that I noticed was the ability to place up to three of those forest tiles into spaces. Which was linked with the cat. So it's like, oh, when you reflip the cat, it's like, okay, you reboot things. You have the same powers of like, hey, I'm taking this wisp, but I'm going to use that pattern instead, this like Tetris shape that's across the pond, or I'm going to wipe everything. So it's like, I felt in the way that I'm saying streamline, that they kind of just combine mechanics to make it a little bit more intuitive and connect it with fun little like flipping of a cat or doing this little thing or putting in the pond. It's double-sided. One side has that reminder that you can grab up to four, where the other doesn't. So it could be just art, or it could be that visual reminder. So a lot of that is like, when I think of a game as a product, those are product choices that they did a great job on.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree with you.
And then as far as the solo mode goes, how is that different from the base game?
So the solo mode is different because there's actually a ghost cat that is on the pond. So you set up a game like you would normally, and then you take another cat tile and you replace a wisp on the pond with that extra cat tile. And that cat tile is known as the ghost cat. And so this is where you get to use the firefly tokens that we mentioned, as well as you get to use the backside of the grid guides. And so you choose one of the grid guides to flip over. They have different levels of difficulty. That kind of shows the preference of the ghost cat, like what they're after, because the ghost cat will move around the pond in a clockwise manner based on flipping of the firefly token. And so that'll tell you their preference that they will go to, while the firefly token will tell you how far it can move. So within its movement, which one of those wisp clockwise does it desire? And so it'll basically capture that wisp, and you'll start to put it next to the grid guide for the ghost cat, and that's how they will score and have a score for you to compare to.
That's very cool. Did you enjoy working on a solo version?
That's a great question. I am personally not a big solo player. I tend to play games with other people. that was definitely an interesting part of it for me. I think once we kind of settled more on some of the ideas and it, you know, it started to take shape more, that was more enjoyable. But initially it was like, okay, how are we going to tackle this?
It was kind of painful because it's not what you normally do.
Yeah, it could have been anything, right? And so we started to narrow that down. And I would say it may not be my favorite thing to work on, but it's still game design nonetheless. And I still, you know, enjoyed getting to work on it and develop it.
I know that for me, I've developed 2 solo games for Wise Wizard. I made the solo mode for Pack the Essentials with Jacqueline, the designer. And then I did the development for Sherlock Solitaire. And similar to you, I'm not normally a big solo player. So I had to play through a ton of solo games to kind of get an idea of what people like. Interviewed a ton of customers Yes. that like to play those games to figure out what about solo modes they find enjoyable. Is it better to beat a rank? Is it better to have like a win-loss condition? Is it better to have like preset levels or whatever? And so that all was interesting to me because it was trying to do something I'm not as comfortable with. And it is skills that you can carry on to the future. But it's also that, like, how do we make a solo mode that feels like the base game, doesn't add too many extra rules, but like stays thematic? And it sounds like you guys accomplished that.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I had to do quite a bit of research myself because, you know, I wasn't as familiar. CG has made some too, so they were good to bounce ideas off of. I think this too is where you know, when you also have friends in the industry or other game designers that you get to work with, that's helpful as well. And I had mentioned a while back or earlier that, you know, I had met a couple of game designers, and that would be Steven Aramini and Danny Devine. They're designers of Sprawlopolis. So that's a great game to solo. Steven does a lot of different solo designs. I've helped him with Flip Town, which came out a couple of years ago, and I actually helped him develop it. And so we recently finished developing a solo mode for that. So I had a little bit of experience, but having him as like a, you know, sounding board was really helpful as well during that time.
It is great that you have that community that you can lean on. And how long do you think in total it took from that initial inspiration of like the 18 card game style into the published version of Wispwood?
That's a great question because I don't exactly remember how long, like from the 18 card game, that I still tweaked it and revisited it before I really shelved it. Because it really was a couple of years of just it being shelved before I came back to it. I will say this, I did pick it back up earlier in 2024, probably like in the spring, and I worked really hard on it until BGG. And honestly, BGG was the first place I pitched it. So I actually hadn't really pitched it much before that. But I couldn't tell you how long the 18 card design I had worked on at that time, like earlier years before.
And so that's roughly about a year from BGG when you pitched it to it actually releasing. And yeah, some change. So probably about that 2-ish year mark, maybe. And do you feel like as a designer, doing the Unpub speed pitching was a good choice for you, or like going to like BGGCon? Like, how would you explain that as far as giving advice to other designers on possibly getting their game signed?
Yes, I would say that Unpub is great. Ben has always been very kind and welcoming. It's hard not to like Ben. One thing I would say with Wispwood and getting it signed with CGE, as I mentioned earlier, like it wasn't a good fit for their catalog. And I even kind of knew that, you know, when I was about to pitch it with them, just being familiar, you know, with their company a little bit. It's one of those things where I wouldn't have normally pitched to them outside of a speed pitching event where I was forced to pitch to them. And so it's one of those things where sometimes it just, it's the right time at the right place. And it just happened to work out that time. And I'm thankful for that. And I think regardless whether you get picked up at a speed pitching event or an Unpub event or whatever, it's like, that's all just little steps that you're taking towards getting it signed. And so it's all very helpful and useful as you move forward with that design and other designs.
Yeah. I feel like too many people have said I get lucky, but really I work hard to put myself in situations where I can get lucky. It's kind of like that idea of like, I want to win the lottery, but if you don't buy a lottery ticket, how are you going to win?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for me also, because I've volunteered for Unpub for years, it's always been funny when we reach out to publishers, and a lot of publishers refuse to do things like speed pitching because they're like, but so many games don't fit me. So kind of the opposite of what you're saying, or you're like, oh, I was forced to pitch to someone who I thought wouldn't be a fit. so often publishers are switching what they're doing. I know we saw that last year with the tariffs and how publishers were kind of adjusting and slowing down on making certain games, going more to like cards and things that they could maybe publish in the United States or at least not in China. So you really never know what might end up being a fit. And regardless, the networking is always good just in case down the line you do have something that might be a better fit.
I would say you're absolutely right about the, like, you need to obviously improve and hone your craft, but you also have to place yourself in fortuitous situations for that luck to even happen. And I would say Wispwood's a prime example of that because, you know, again, as I mentioned, I wasn't intending to pitch it to them, but they had just come off of making SETI the year before.
Very different vibe.
Yes. And they were not looking for another heavier game to make this next year in 2025. It was one of those situations where if they were going to make a game that was new to them at all, it was needing to be a lighter game. And that was something I had no idea of, right? I wasn't in their meetings or knew that that was the case for CGE, and probably not too many people did know that. And so it was one of those things that it was the right place at the right time and kind of threading a needle that just fit the bill for them. But, you know, I also, like you're saying, like I put myself in that situation for it to even happen. So it kind of takes both sides of it.
Oh, totally. Do you have a favorite and a least favorite part of the experience of this design in particular?
Overall, it was just a great experience with CGE. And I would say I'm just thankful for them. That's probably just the most enjoyable part, was just getting to work with them, you know, on a day-to-day basis. It's hard to say that's even the least, but I think, you know, the solo, like as we mentioned, wasn't like, oh, this is, you know, I just love doing this. But, you know, obviously I think you need to love the game you're making because you're going to spend a ton of time with it. And even though it was just the solo mode, it was like, well, I'm still getting to play something that I find is really engaging for me. I don't want to sound ungrateful because it's like, man, I'm super thankful for CG and all that they have done for me and for Wispwood. So, you know, I'm probably not going to go off and design solo games, right? So, but if they want a solo mode, I will gladly do it.
We all have our wheelhouses. I know that the only way I'm ever designing a really heavy Euro game is as a co-design with someone else yes. who has more expertise there, because otherwise the math will not be 100%. I will promise you there. There will be some broken pieces.
Hey, that's all right.
Yeah. I know we kind of talked about a piece of advice just being like, don't pitch two games with the same theme.
Yes.
But do you have any other like big takeaways from this experience?
I think the biggest takeaway is just that this whole process, designing a game, taking it through development and publishing, is that it's just a marathon. It's not a sprint. And I think too often, I know I will find myself wanting to hurry something or rush something, whether that's just to get an email out or to take it to a convention. I think I've improved on that over the years of slowing down a little more and just realizing, like, yes, you want to be there at the right time at the right place, but you also want to be well prepared and ready for that moment. If you rush it, you're not going to be as ready as you probably should be for that moment. So just knowing that it doesn't always have to feel maybe as dire as maybe, you know, I know I can make it seem in my head, but that it's way more of a marathon than it is a sprint. Does it feel that way because you see new games coming out all the time and you see really popular designers having tons of games come out or old ones rehashed? And so you kind of just feel like the rest of the industry is like racing by you, but it's one of those things that you can get in on that and have your moment too, but it just takes time, and the right amount of time, I think, will pay off in the end.
I feel like something that a lot of people don't realize, you mentioned the popular designers or whatever. So many of those quote unquote popular designers go through the anxiety of, what if my next game isn't as good as my last? Like, they have all the same problems, or sometimes they are also speeding too fast. And they're like, you know, if I'd taken a little longer, this game would have been better and it would have done better. Is it a flash in the pot, or is it going to be something that's going to be long lasting? I know a lot of the time me and my friends will talk about, like, what is success for a game designer? Is it money? Is it the amount of games you put out? Is it that you have that one game that continually reprints and is an evergreen? And so it's always interesting to see different people's perspectives on that. Because, like, for me, like, I think I am doing pretty good. But also, if you look at my bank account, you would not say I'm a popular or successful designer.
Well, and, you know, and I don't mean to bash, like, popular designers by any means. I mean, I love all sorts of games from all ranges of designers, but I think you're right. Like, I know they go through the same problems or other problems, you know, that maybe newer designers don't. It's different for different people, for sure.
Oh, totally. Do you have any other projects fans should be looking out for? I know you have another signed one, but I don't know if you're allowed to talk about it.
I won't say too much about that one. I don't want to misspeak, but I think I constantly have a few games that I'm working on at any time, and trying to pitch at the same time. So I would just say I have a few more games that are just continuing down like the development track. Nothing too much I think I want to announce, because it's of those stages where it's like, oh, if you say something and then it doesn't come to fruition, yeah, then
totally don't want to jinx it. I get it. Well, then, and for my last question, if you could have been the designer of any game, which one would you have chosen?
One of my favorite games is Baron Park, and that's a Phil Walker Harding game, and I really love Baron Park. Play it all the time on BGA, and yeah, I really love spatial games, so that's just one that's at the top for me, and I'd love to see it even get a reprint. I don't know if that'll ever happen, but I think it's one of those that I think deserves one, but maybe that's just because I'm biased towards it, but I just think it's a really fun fill the space kind of game, and has a really contagious like engine where you just keep getting more pieces and better pieces, and kind of a race to finish your park first. It just ticks a lot of boxes for me that I really enjoy when playing games.
Yeah, I think Phil does a really good job about making super approachable games that are fun, and some feel very unique and others just feel like it's a better version of something that was out there. And you're not the only one who's mentioned that game before on the podcast.
Well, yeah, it's a great game.
I agree. Sadly, I've not actually played a full game of it, so I need to get on that. I was at a convention and started to, but then I just kept getting interrupted, and then it was time for dinner. So,
well, if we're ever at a convention together, I'd love to play a full game with you, or if you ever want to hop on BGA, I could play there with you too.
So yeah, fun fact, I rarely play published games online because I spend so many of my hours playtesting online, so it very rarely happens. I won't say it won't happen, because it does sometimes, but it's more likely I'll play in person with you.
Okay, sounds good. I will say that I know this sounds like I'm bragging, but I play Baron Park enough, but I am a top 10 player on BGA for Baron Park, like all time.
And you're trying to sucker me into playing with you? What?
Yes, I just really enjoy it. I love the spatial part of it, but I have thought through that game way too much.
That is hilarious. Okay, well, we're definitely not playing now, so that's okay, all I'm hearing.
Nice.
Maybe we will. It's okay. I don't really care if I lose. I will be sassy while playing, though. I don't know if you remember that from our playtest of your game, but
no, yes. I do. And really, the sassiness is better than anything else that's really in the game. So,
oh, perfect. Or maybe the cattiness.
Yes.
Yeah. And with that terrible joke, I'm going to close out this episode. And thank you so much for everyone dealing with my shenanigans in this episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 134, Wispwood. Reed, for you, anyone who's trying to follow you online, do you have like social media that you want to plug?
I do. I am most active on Instagram, and I think that's just Reed Ambrose, just full name on there. I'm on BGG as well as kind of the main two places that I keep up with online.
Thanks for reminding me I have a BGG page. That's a great point, and I should definitely plug it more. I've been your host. I'm Danielle Reynolds, and you can find me at Instagram, also Blue Sky, but BGG too, under Token Gamer, and that's GAYMER. And for everybody who has noticed, or maybe you haven't, we've started some short form videos on TikTok and Instagram under the same name of Game Design Unboxed, which I highly recommend checking out if you want to learn some tips and tricks from industry professionals, as well as learn a little bit more about some of your favorite games. Thank you so much, Reed, for being on the show, and maybe you'll appear in one of those videos someday.
Hey, thanks, Danielle. I really appreciate you having me.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out NoDirectionPodcasts.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out AllPlay at LetsAllPlay.com. Join us next time.